across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the state of Wiscommon Sense from the shores of Lake Wissota, where it's a beautiful day up north, especially if you're looking at it from indoors with air conditioning, because it is very humid out there and foggy and smoky, but we're up north, so it's still beautiful. It's 67 muggy degrees up here on the lake with 93% humidity on this Thursday, June 29th. Folks listening in the Chippewa Valley on our home base, 93.5 The Tap. Folks in Waukesha listening to the Shaw are at 63 degrees right now. Lake Air Radio listeners in Amory, you're at 60 degrees. Madison at 71, La Crosse 70. And Buzz of the North listeners around Hayward, it's 62 degrees. Here's what's on tap this morning. A new public opinion poll from the University, or from the Marquette University Law School, shows a very large uptick in job approval for Governor Tony Evers. So in our weekly review of political headlines, Joe Zepecki says it's a matter of trust, especially as more self-described independents see how Evers' actions compare with the Republicans running the legislature. Also this hour, Republicans tried to pull a fast one last night, trying to undermine the Wisconsin Elections Commission. The unexpected move came just minutes after they passed the Republican version of a state budget bill that wastes the state surplus in a way that's going to be talked about for many years to come. In our second hour, a bad air like this isn't always this visible. Environmental epidemiologist Amy Kalkbrenner studies the bodily harm done by environmental pollutants. She and Dr. Kristen Lyerly note that while the smoke from the Canadian wildfires is obviously bad, Wisconsinites are frequently exposed to tiny but dangerous particulates that could be reduced in the air if we would take more action to combat a changing climate. A reminder that for a Monday and Tuesday for the 4th of July holiday, we will have best of shows. We'll be back live next Wednesday, but we still have a show to do tomorrow. And tomorrow we are giving away Brewers tickets, 4 tickets to next Monday afternoon's game against the Chicago Cubs at American Family Field. So you're going to want to tune in tomorrow for that. When it happens, you're going to want that studio line number handy, 844-967-2789. And if you want to send us a note by email, the address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. This is normally where I say good morning to Aaron Zommers, but Aaron's got the day off today. And so for the first time, we welcome Calvin Butenhoff from the Shaw down there in Waukesha, who's manning the buttons, dials, and knobs, or whatever they call them on those boards these days. Calvin, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. So, Calvin, give us the very quick and dirty elevator pitch about who is Calvin?
Well, I am the producer of the Earl Ingram Show and Mathlin Dirac here on the Civic Media Network. I started working here in August after graduating from UW-Whitewater.
All right. And where are you from originally?
I am from Eagle in southwest Waukesha County.
Yes. Okay. Well, good. Well, glad to have you here. And as only the latest in a line of producers who are all infinitely younger than me, I have a very specific question for people of your age. Are you familiar with the Grimace Shake TikTok trend that's going on right now?
I've heard of it. I haven't actually seen it.
Good. Then you're already a step ahead of most people of a younger age, because it's one of those. Here, I bragged about it on my Twitter feed yesterday that I've been seeing all these things about the Grimace Shake trend, but that I didn't know what it was. I don't want to know what it was. I'm not going to take time to go look it up. If I just organically, if it comes up, I'll learn what it is. And I was very happy to say it took about 11 hours until, as I was last evening in the middle of a legislative recess, scrolling through TikTok, and up comes a video that explains what the Grimace Shake thing is. And now I'm mildly horrified by it, but I also give points for creativity. So I'm a little surprised that nobody at Civic Media has done it yet, but Calvin, between you and or Aaron or somebody, I fully expect I'm going to see something on TikTok about what a Grimace Shake does to producers at Civic Media.
Yeah, maybe. Kristen Bry is the TikTok person at Civic Media, so maybe she can assist us.
See, and she's a mom to be. She's going to be way too kind and gentle to make basically a horror movie spinoff of a grimace shake, you know, turning people into a horrifying, you know, purple faced death. That's the best way I can explain it. I don't even really quite understand it. I just know that all kinds of people are showing up on TikTok with like these horror movie things that they've made up, and they're lying on the ground with a purple face, and apparently Grimace is responsible. Honest to God, I didn't know anybody knew who Grimace was anymore. I haven't seen Grimace in a McDonald's commercial in 30 years. Did you even know who Grimace was until this year?
Vaguely, I believe.
Yeah, because
they in the Happy Meals back when I was a kid.
Yeah, because they haven't done anything with Grimace or the Hamburglar or Mayor McCheese or anything like that. So they tried to bring back Grimace, and look what people do. They make horror movie spoofs, turning him into a crazed killer. So, you know, it's TikTok. These are the things that are going to happen. Hey, up on the Up North News website right now, we have a story about the new Pregnant Workers Fairness Act that you may want to read up on if you're of a certain age and starting a family and want to be treated well in the workplace. Our new newsletter came out at 5 o'clock this morning, as it does every weekday, and it includes 4th of July fireworks shows around Wisconsin. And then we have our own TikTok that I put together that Kristen Lyerly and I did the other day about State Representative Chuck Wickers trying to explain contraceptives. You're going to want to see that. Headlines coming up along with the Brewers update next. You're up north.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
We'll have today's history lesson and music break coming up at 6:50. Dr. Kristen Lyerly will join us, but we'll do one spoiler. It was on this day in 1974 that Gordon Lightfoot, who recently passed away, had the number one hit with Sundown. Coming up tomorrow on the program, Kia Vakil, Mark Jacob, Dan Schumacher, all the usual suspects that we'll have on a Friday morning. Christian Yelich had 3 hits and 2 RBIs, leading the Milwaukee Brewers to a 5-2 win over the New York Mets last night at Citi Field. They will do it once more this evening with Adrian Hauser for the Crew, Max Scherzer for the Mets. Then it's off to Pittsburgh for games Friday, Saturday, Sunday, before coming home next Monday to start a series with the Cubs. And as we mentioned, we will have a 4-pack of tickets to give away tomorrow on the show for Monday afternoon's game. So stay tuned for that. Also, there was a perfect game pitched in the major leagues last night. Only the 24th perfect game in baseball history in the bigs. And as sometimes happens with no-hitters and perfect games, it comes not from a household name, but an unlikely hurler, Domingo Germán of the New York Yankees. And a lot of Yankees fans probably missed it because it was a late game out on the West Coast as Germán retired all 27 Oakland A's batters in a row. 27 up, 27 down, no hits, walks, errors. Then the Yankees 11-0 victory. So a little baseball history happening yesterday. You all right over there, Calvin? We don't allow producers to die on air like that.
Yeah, I'm good. My bad.
It's okay. We worry. It's the grandpa and me. I hear a cough and I got to make sure everybody's okay. All right. We're going to do some headlines here. And as always, studio line is open at 844-967-2789 if you'd like to comment. The state Senate met last night. And so, you know, like a lot of you, I was watching Wisconsin Eye, you know, well into the night. Okay, maybe it's just me and about 6 other nerds, but we were watching the state Senate on TV last night and, you know, not surprised at what the main order of business was. It was about debating and passing a state budget bill. And the question was, would Republicans listen to the outcry about how bad this bill is when it came out of the Joint Finance Committee? And would they make some amendments on the floor of the Senate to fix some of what's so glaringly wrong with the bill? They did not. They did not offer any amendments of their own of any substance. And then Democrats offered their own amendments, about a dozen or so, trying to basically fix the bill. And Republicans, of course, rejected all of those. And so the bill goes untouched to the state assembly. And then the assembly will vote on it. If you assume that they don't make any changes either, it'll go to Governor Tony Evers for either a signature or some partial vetoes, or he could veto the full thing and tell Republicans to start over. And so one of the things I'd like to know over the next few days here is, what's your advice for the governor? Should he make them start over? Or should he sign it, doing the best you can with the line item vetoes, and then use that signed budget basically as a rhetorical club to beat over the heads of Republicans over their out-of-touch priorities? And they are truly out of touch. When you look at what Democrats put up as amendments yesterday to fix this bill, every Republican in the Senate is now on record voting to keep the 1849 abortion ban on the books. That was one of the amendments, because you could put that in the bill, saying that it's time to scrap a bill that was written by a bunch of white guys a year after Wisconsin became a state. And every Republican said, nope, keep this total ban in place with no exceptions for rape or incest. They voted against postpartum coverage to expand coverage for women who just had a baby. They voted against affordable child care funding, the Child Care Counts program that is now going to end because Republicans refused to fund it. They voted against paid family leave. They voted against meals for hungry kids. What did they vote for? Well, Republican Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahue praised the budget. He said it's, quote, investing in our core priorities. If your core priorities are tax cuts for the rich, he praised the fact that this bill moves the state closer to a flat tax. But remember what a flat tax is. It's the ultimate redistribution of wealth from the middle class to the GOP's wealthiest donors. Democrats on the floor talked about how Republicans missed the opportunity to take a record $7 billion surplus and invested in things like affordable child care, the University of Wisconsin system, school safety, more high-speed internet coverage, and a bigger tax cut for the middle class, not the $6 a week the Republican plan gives people who are earning the median income in the state. Now, sure enough, Republicans did brag that their tax cut was actually a 15% tax cut compared to Governor Evers, who was proposing a 10% tax cut. Talk about having fun with math. Again, Governor Evers' tax cut was 10% for everybody making less than $150,000 if you're filing jointly, less than $100,000 as an individual. Republicans say they cut taxes 15%. But by and large, the tax cut is single digits for most people making the median income or below, and well above 15% for multimillionaires. But they're not going to say all that. They're just going to say we cut taxes 15%. Now you know better, in case it ever comes up in conversation or a political ad comes on and you can help people understand that what they're saying ain't necessarily so. So what do you think? Would you just veto the bill? Keeping in mind that Republicans don't have to pass another new bill. We'll talk about that with Joe Zepecki at 6:30, but definitely interested in what you have to say about that. Well, then, at that point, we're now coming up on 9 p.m. And by the way, before we get to the surprise about trying to undermine the Wisconsin Elections Commission, let me just note this. They took the vote at about 9 o'clock. They gave speeches on the, you know, they tried the amendments, gave speeches on the amendments, and then everybody had to give closing remarks. And again, as somebody who served in the state Senate for 4 years, I have to say, I look at a lot of the speeches and I just want to ring up some cell phones and go, who do you think you're talking to? I mean, I appreciate the passion, but state your case, move on. I don't think that a speech, whether it runs 2 minutes or 12 minutes, is going to get Devin Lemahue to change his vote. So make your point succinctly, because that's what the voters want to hear. What is it you're really trying to say? But speeches went on until 9 o'clock last night, and then they took the vote It went exactly as expected. The Senate thought they were getting ready to adjourn. Everybody was starting to shuffle their papers. And then the Republicans pulled something right out of Columbo. Oh, one more thing. We have this privileged resolution, a nice little parliamentary trick here. We have this resolution that moves the appointment of Megan Wolf for a new term as Wisconsin Elections Commission Administrator to its appropriate committee so that we, the Senate, can then vote on that nomination later on. Well, hold the phone. There is no nomination of Megan Wolf to serve another term as Wisconsin Elections Commission Administrator. You may recall that night before last, the Wisconsin Elections Commission met. It's made up of three Republicans and three Democrats. So there's this bipartisan commission, and then the administrator, Megan Wolf, basically runs the office and helps administer elections and helps guide 1,800 clerks all around Wisconsin who make our elections safe and secure. She has done a masterful job. Her term ends at the end of June. Republicans in the state Senate have said that they are not inclined to support her for another term because she, let me check my notes here, told the truth about elections and blew up all the lies and misinformation. And apparently that's not something you're supposed to do from a Republican point of view, is talk about the ways our elections are safe. No, instead they talked about the doubts that are out there about election integrity, the doubts that they planted purposefully by lying about Wisconsin elections. And so they have indicated that if Megan Wolf is renominated, that they would vote to reject her confirmation. And then that could allow Republican leadership in the legislature to appoint someone else to be an interim administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Well, this sounds all very straightforward, right? But now here's where it gets interesting. Remember Fred Prehn? He was the Scott Walker appointee to the Natural Resources Board. And when his term ended a couple of years ago, he refused to step down. Even though his term was over, he said, well, the Senate Republicans have not confirmed Governor Evers' nominee to succeed me. So as long as the Senate hasn't voted to confirm my replacement, I get to stay. Which, of course, is ridiculous. But it went to the state Supreme Court. And the conservative justices on the court backed Fred Prehn and said, you know, they're right. He's right. As long as Republicans don't vote on a successor, never mind the fact that Republicans in the Senate actually conspired with Prehn to say, we're going to block Evers' nominee. We're not even going to bring that person up for a vote so that you get to be a squatter and stay on the Natural Resources Board, so that Scott Walker's appointees still have a majority on the Natural Resources Board, even though your term has expired. And it worked until Governor Evers won a second term and then Fred Prehn finally slinked away. But there is now this precedent from the state Supreme Court that says, hey, as long as your successor hasn't been nominated, you get to stay in the job. So now we come back to the Wisconsin Elections Commission on Wednesday evening, late afternoon, early evening. And the Republican members of the commission said, well, Megan Wolf's term is up. We would like to advance her to be nominated for another term. Now, they did it knowing the nomination would then go to the Senate, where Republicans in the Senate would shoot it down. So they're proposing to renominate her just so that she can be fired. Democrats on the commission rightly said, why? Why should we do this? There's no vacancy. Megan Wolf doesn't want to leave. She's doing a capable job. So no, we're not going to vote no on this. We're going to abstain from voting. So it was 3-4 renominating Megan Wolf, 0 against it, 3 abstentions. And the rules are very clear. There is no nomination advanced from the Election Commission unless a majority votes. And there weren't 4 votes there. There's only 3. We all know how math works. And yet Senate Republicans late last night passed a resolution that said, we recognize that she has been nominated by the Elections Commission, and we're going to prepare to vote on her nomination and probably to reject it. But that's not a real thing. She's not nominated. The Elections Commission took no such action. But it's not going to stop Republicans from once again trying to make mischief with state appointments and the security of our elections. Joe Zepecki is coming up next. You're up north. Now it's time for us to get into the exact numbers of the latest Marquette Law School poll. And to do that, of course, our friend Joe Zepecki. Joe, good morning. How are you?
I'm all right.
All right. Well, look, this poll, I guess it's fair to call it surprising. I don't know. You're in the kind of business where you're not allowed to be surprised by anything. You clearly have your finger on the pulse. But I was a little surprised at some of these numbers. What was your overall impression?
I like to think I have my finger on the pulse, but even still, there were some numbers that I would say jumped off the page.
Yeah, and including starting with the very first one that they released on Governor Evers' job approval. What did you make of that?
Wow, is what I make of that. Perhaps three-term Tony, indeed. Mm-hmm. Maybe the remarks he made, perhaps in jest, but perhaps maybe not in jest. Maybe they knew something we didn't know. The fact that he is viewed 18 points more favorably than unfavorably, he's at 57 to 39 among independents who are determinative in the state. He is viewed 60% favorably, 35% unfavorably. That is a big improvement and a real testament to the leadership that Governor Evers has shown throughout the budget process. Even though we are close to done, we're not quite done, and I think it really bodes well. Voters understand, the public understands that Tony Evers is somebody they can trust on the big ticket items.
Yeah, and to have that 57% job approval, you know, when it was 46% back in October, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of an increase. Again, that can't be, and I'm not taking anything away from the governor, but it can't all be attributed to him. It never can be. There's always other factors. The other factor in this case being, when they compare him to what they're hearing from Republicans,
right.
it only helps you look good. You know,
it's the old Joe Biden line, and I know we'll get to him a little bit later, but it's what Biden always says is, don't compare me to the Almighty, compare me to the alternative. And the alternative between Governor Evers and many elements of the Republican caucus or Republican conference in the state assembly and Senate, there is a clear distinction. And so you are right that it is about that. I think it is also a function of an improving economy, people understanding that the economy and the economic recovery from the pandemic is going better here in the United States, and in fact, better here in Wisconsin than it is in a lot of places. And that's why you don't just see an uptick in Evers's approval. You also see an uptick in the mood of the electorate. Pollsters love to ask this right track, wrong track, right track, wrong direction question, and it's getting better. In March, only 34% of Wisconsinites said things were on the right track. Now, 40% of Wisconsinites think things are on the right track. And, you know, nobody is going to sit here and sing hosannas and suggest the work is done or that everything is hunky-dory, but the recognition that things are improving, that people are working, that unemployment is low, that incomes have stabilized, if not begun to grow again, inflation cooling. These are all good things that people are clearly feeling. As a result, they feel better about the state, better about their community, and in this case, better about their governor, which is great.
Well, the other thing that I think it is that we're no longer in an election season for the first time in a long time in Wisconsin. And so you don't have these political ads that are, you know, trashing one person or another, trashing the economy. You don't have the impression that there are people rooting for failure. When you take that whole box of communication off of people's TVs, mm-hmm. it's no wonder they you know, feel a little bit better as opposed to how negative they feel when you have these pulsating messages of, you know, it's all doom and gloom. So this is a good time of year right now, not to be election season.
No, it's not election season. It's summertime. If it weren't for the air quality, everything would be going great. Mm-hmm. You know, so Other things I took away from the poll, consistent with that sort of slightly improving mood of the electorate, the fact that Joe Biden's standing has improved. He was viewed 41% favorably in March, now 45% favorably. That's a step in the right direction. I think that may have, as you noted, when we're talking about Governor Evers, something to do with the Republican presidential primary being more in people's face, more in the news. And that is why he is besting both Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump, although admittedly he's trouncing Donald Trump in a head-to-head and not quite trouncing Ron DeSantis. That's a function of people understand that maybe not great, things are on a better track, things are stabilizing. That is a good thing if you want to see Democrats and progressives build political power. And yeah, so I walked away from this poll feeling better about the shape of the world than I thought I might. The other one that sort of jumped off the page to me was the Trump and DeSantis head-to-head numbers in the primary.
Oh, let me go through these with folks here, because first off, if you have never heard of ranked choice voting, or it sounds complex, you might be more of a fan after this, because first they ask of all of the, you know, candidates, it's, you know, Donald Trump comes up first, 31%, then Ron DeSantis only a point behind at 30%. Then you got to go way down and get 6% for Mike Pence, 5% for Tim Scott, and 21% say they haven't decided. Okay, so Trump up by one. But when they're then told if you could only choose between Trump or DeSantis, 57% of those Republicans say they'd pick DeSantis, and only 41% say Trump.
Yeah. And now here's my quibble with that entire set of numbers, mm-hmm. which, while they're interesting, they don't tell me a lot. And the reason for that is this is a statewide poll with a mix of Democrats, a mix of independents, and a mix of Republicans. And within especially the mix of Democrats and Republicans, that means the type of partisans who vote in primaries and the types who don't. No political party is a monolith. 100% of Democrats don't vote in Democratic primaries. 100% of Republicans don't vote in Republican primaries. So this is a skewed look at the Republican primary for president. If you wanted to do a Republican presidential primary poll in Wisconsin, you would only talk to Republicans who have voted in presidential primaries in the past. And if you did, I believe you would see a much more significant lead for Donald Trump, who retains the most support among the most partisan Republicans, who are therefore the most likely to participate in primaries. I think it is those Republicans who are maybe closer to the middle, more moderate Republicans, who it doesn't matter that it's Ron DeSantis particularly, they are just looking for an off-ramp, for an alternative to Donald Trump. And that, to me, explains why Biden bests Trump by 9 points in the head-to-head matchup in this same poll. So it's not really a fair comparison to say the scoreboard in the Republican presidential primary here is Trump 31, DeSantis 30. Just be careful with those numbers.
It's a very good point, and I if I had funny sound effects, you'd hear all the air deflating out of my balloon here. But you know, again, you make great points about the poll itself. So on the Democratic side, we need to point out then that among Democrats and those who lean Democratic, Biden has 49%, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. 9%, Marianne Williamson 3%, and another 39% say they are undecided. Again, with the usual disclaimer, it is way too early for this kind of stuff. I don't know if I want to ask you more about the people who say they're undecided, or who in their right minds is supporting either Robert Kennedy Jr. or Marianne Williamson, but that's my personal opinion.
I think the 39% are just a little bit more polite than the 12% who are splitting between those two non-factors in the race. Neither Kennedy nor Williamson is going to be the Democratic standard bearer. Listen, there are people, and again, it's the same thing, where you've got some Democrats who are not big partisans, who don't vote in primaries typically, and you're kind of asking them an unfair question of if they had a vote in the nominating process. And I think it's understandable that there's a decent number of them who say, boy, Joe Biden's doing a fine job. That's why his approval's up. Boy, the state of the world is better than it was, especially under the last guy. And they have concerns about his age and are interested in whether there might be an alternative. That's okay. They're allowed to think that. And I believe that once the chips are down and the stakes are set and the matchup is Biden versus going back to Trump or Ron DeSantis or fill in the blank Republican nominee as you wish, then those folks will, as we call it in politics, come back home. They will understand the stakes of the race and they will be just fine and feel very confident in voting for another 4 years for Joe Biden.
Now that I've picked on the people who are supporting, you know, shall we say, the fringe candidates on the Democratic side, let me do the same on the Republican side and note that among Republicans and Republican leaners, former Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark, a cartoon character, if ever there were one, still draws a 48% favorable rating. And I personally, I'm rooting for him to be the nominee up against Tammy Baldwin. I know, careful what you wish for. But I still think this indicates there are a lot of people that really don't know David Clark yet.
Yeah, correct. He's been out of office for quite some time. This is a guy who, despite the fact he is a conservative, ultra MAGA, Donald Trump loving Republican, ran as a Democrat. You know, we've sometimes heard this term fake Democrats. Mm-hmm. Running for, I mean, this was the definition of a fake Democrat. And there are a lot of people who don't consume news every day and they see, you know, they think about who they're going to vote for the 5 minutes before they walk into the booth. And so that number, I don't think means much. Nobody has spent a dime for or against David Clark in years. If he were the nominee, those numbers would come crashing down to earth very quickly.
Yes. I'm going to read directly from the law poll posts when it comes to the issue of abortion, saying that there have been modest changes in views since the Dobbs decision, quote, with a slight increase in percent saying all abortion should be legal and a slight decline in percent saying all abortions should be illegal. Again, in my mind, not a real big surprise, but it is a degree of affirmation, if you will, to see it reflected in these numbers.
It is, and we should do the forever true caveat. All polls are just a snapshot of a moment in time.
Right.
Where you see the trend lines, though, and particularly on this question of abortion, this is consistent with polling we're seeing in other states, with national polling, that since the Dobbs decision, there has been a real, consistent, and notable shift in people's opinions and perspectives about access to reproductive healthcare. And so it is just one poll, but the fact that it's another data point that says the same thing that the last 20 polls I've seen, it says the same thing. When the poll keeps spitting out the same information, you can say, this is real. People's views have changed. And it's because of stories and seeing the cost, the human toll, and how scary it is for women right now and for those trying to start families, because of the Dobbs decision, courtesy of Donald Trump and a conservative majority on the Supreme Court.
So there you have most of the poll, and you can, of course, find it online. And, you know, there'll be much to talk about, as we always do, you know, until the next one. And so with the final minute or so that we've got, and I know we'll do much more about this next week, but, you know, we've been asking it all week. It's more of a parlor game than anything else. But depending on the final product of the state budget, if it does not change substantially and it has this Foxconn-esque tax cut plan in it, and it has, you know, a spending cut for the UW system, I think I asked last week whether you think he would veto it or not. Would you suggest he veto it or not? I would ask instead, what will he do? Do you think he actually would veto a budget bill that looks the way that it looked coming out of joint finance?
I don't know enough about the particulars of what the final out of joint finance looked like. We know what some of the top lines are. Mm-hmm. I've not gone through the budget line by line. Here's what I will say. I trust Tony Evers to make the right decision for the people of Wisconsin, for our kids, for our families. If the legislature sends him an untenable budget that simply does not work for the people of Wisconsin, he will veto it, and he should. If he has sent a budget that has some wins for Democrats, has some wins for Republicans, that the people of Wisconsin can live with and we can sort of maintain the progress that we're making, I think he will find a way to sign it. through use of line item vetoes. The governor of Wisconsin is a very powerful position. It's a little bit less powerful than it used to be. I don't have to tell you that, but there are ways to make good enough a little bit better. And if there's an opportunity for that, I think that's what the governor will do. But make no mistake, if this budget misses too many opportunities and is not right for the people of Wisconsin, he will veto it. And so that's what we're going to find out in the next 24 hours or so, is what does that final product look like?
All right. Joe Zepecki, thanks so much. Have a great holiday weekend.
You too. Happy 4th.
Back with a history lesson and a music break next. You're up north.
Chance for scattered thunderstorms again tonight. Lows level off around.
Dr. Kristen Lyerly coming up at 7:30. Guest is Dr. Amy Kalkbrenner, an air pollution researcher at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and they will be talking about how unhealthy air isn't always this visible. But Dr. Lyerly joins us a little bit early now. So, Calvin, with your permission, would you bring that music back up so we can start the music segment here? On this day in 1984, after a failed attempt shooting a studio video for Dancing in the Dark, Bruce Springsteen does it live in concert at the St. Paul Civic Center. And it was during Clarence Clemens' sax solo that he brought a young Kristen Lyerly up on stage. Then, having discovered that she dances like a white girl from Kaukauna, she was ushered off stage. And a 19-year-old Courtney Cox was brought up on stage to dance with him, and the rest was music video history. Good morning, Dr. Lyerly.
Good morning, Mr. Brightlow. How are you?
Well, a lot better now that I could finally tell that historical chestnut that a lot of people thought was lost to MTV history.
Yeah, little known fact.
Yeah, you were not there. I remember the Springsteen concert. I wasn't there, but I remember it was a big deal that he was playing there. And then when you see this video show up, a couple months later or so, that was pretty cool. And everybody was like, "Who's that girl?" And now, everybody knows Courtney Cox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, that was a big deal.
Hey, I should bring these cameras up here. Sorry, I was so caught up in telling the story, I left the wrong graphic up on screen. Kristen, say hi to Calvin.
Hey, Calvin, what's shaking?
Not much, Dr. Lyerly. Nice to meet you.
Good to meet you, too.
So I forget what was Aaron doing today? Is he moving now? Is this moving day for him? Because he was moving. Chad was moving. Todd, everybody's moving, it seems, except us old people, Kristen. He's moving, right? Calvin has no idea.
Yes, Aaron is moving.
He just knows he was summoned to come in here. Okay. Anyway, we're glad you're here. Feel free to jump in if you also want to add any musical history nuggets, like wherever you were in 1962 when the number one song was this by the Contours. And that's where Calvin would play "Do You Love Me?" And
sure, "Do You Love Me?"
Yeah, that'll work. It sounds just like the Contours there. You broke my heart. Hey, there we go.
'Cause I couldn't dance. You didn't even want me around. And now I'm back to let you know I can really shake them down.
Dance break.
Do you love me? I can really move. Do you love me? I'm in the groove. Do you love me?
It was on the day in 2007. That was the device. The iPhone was released, integrating music into a phone for the first time. You remember what a game changer that was? Wait, what?
I remember going to the game before we had a radio, and then we had a Walkman. That was a game changer. And then
And the MP3 players, they were really starting to take off. There were all these different brands, and then suddenly the iPhone came along, and everybody was like, what are these? I still have an old MP3 player, which I thought was so great at the time, but now it's on your phone.
My boyfriend at the time was a Microsoft fan. He got me a Zune.
Oh, the Zune. Poor Microsoft. All right, let's do another birthday.
The frontman for Men at Work, Colin Hay, is 70 years old today. He's got a nice acoustic version of it too, though. I can't get to sleep. Now, we won't play this all the way through because, you know, at the end, he hits that really high. I can't get that stuff. Even he can't do that anymore.
I actually added this to my playlist when I was Chippewa. Especially at
night. He had this great guest appearance on Scrubs. Remember the sitcom? You had to be a Scrubs fan.
Back then.
Really?
I have little kids, man.
But it's just so, it was such a great comedic take on Residence. Highly recommend it. Actor Gary Busey is 79 today. Fred Grandy, Gopher from The Love Boat, and a former congressman, is 75. That doesn't help me feel any younger, does it?
No.
Nicole Scherzinger of Pussycat Dolls, 45. And Colin Jost from SNL, married to Scarlett Johansson. Colin Jost is 41 years old today. And one more tune for you. It was on this day in 1966 that Neil Diamond made his TV debut, performing this hit on American Bandstand. Baby, love me, yes, yes, she does. And while Cherry Cherry plays in the background, I'll tell you that on this day in 1956, the Federal Aid Highway Act was signed by President Eisenhower, officially creating the U.S. Interstate Highway System. So all those I's that you have in your life, I-94 and I-794 and 494 and 91-5. I'm just saying random numbers at this point. Yeah. Anyway.
Did you realize,
you
think about how they're numbered?
I was just going to say, I was going to suggest a video. There is a great video out there that explains the numbering system for the interstates. But I'm guessing you have another thing to tell us about it?
Or? No, just, you know, thinking about how if they run north and south. And
yep. And we can bring Neil out and send Neil Diamond on his way now as we talk a bit more about that. No, there's a couple of good videos that, you know, again, use animation and talk about how the, you know, the old U.S. highways, you know, with the black and white signs. Mm-hmm. Of course, the famous one is, you know, Route 1 that goes down the east coast. So they started from the other end. So, you know, Interstate 1 is over on the west coast, and then they worked their way from west to east, the odd numbers for north and south, and the even ones for east to west. Hey, Bruce, you're back too early. Go away. Hang out in the wings over there. Tell you, these rock stars. There's a good video on that. And now, before I forget, Brewers tickets. Around this time tomorrow, we're going to do a 4-pack of tickets to Monday's game against the Chicago Cubs. Kristen, what are you going to be? You're working for the holiday weekend. And those darn doctors and their crazy working hours.
Yeah, I mean, somebody's got to do it, so.
Yeah, those babies, you know, they don't birth themselves. I mean.
Well, they could.
They could, but yeah, it was a lot more dangerous back in the day.
That's always a good idea to have a trained assistant there with you.
Yeah, that would work out. Tell us about Hometown Health coming up next hour.
Oh, I'm so excited about Hometown Health because I think we all right now are living and trying to breathe in this crazy, smoky environment. So we're going to talk more with a local treasure, Dr. Amy Kalkbrenner, and she's going to help us understand what the risks are and what's safe for us right now.
All right. We'll look forward to that at 7:30. Kristen's going to hang around. We're going to take a break for news and get your local weather forecast in as well. And then we'll come back and talk more about headlines before Hometown Health. Mark Jacob yet and Dan Schumacher all ahead on this Friday. You're up north.